Welcome back to another episode of the Braun Body Health and Fitness Podcast. Joining me today is Anthony, or Tony Pedrotti. Tony and I are going to be discussing what we consider functional training or sports-specific training or that sort of thing. We both kind of noticed that it's very trendy to post on, you know, the social media and that sort of thing about certain exercises being highly functional and that sort of thing. So we offer our two cents on that, in particular in relation to lacrosse. So I end up treating a lot of lacrosse athletes from a PT standpoint, and Tony is a strength and conditioning coach who actually works with extremely high-level lacrosse athletes regularly. So really great episode, and I know you're going to take a lot of good insight from it. Before we get to it, though, be sure to check out our sponsor for Season 5, ISOFIT, my go-to for all things isometric training. Enjoy.
Tony, welcome to the podcast. Super excited to work with you today, man. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, dude, appreciate you having me. I'm excited to get into some things.
Yeah, for people who might not be familiar with you and all the amazing stuff you do up there at Syracuse right now, would you mind filling in a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so I've been in coaching for around 10 years now. Started off as a football coach in the dual role, and you know, I feel like at some point you have to decide whether to go into strength and conditioning or continue with coaching football. I just kind of decided to focus on strength and conditioning. Took a job at Stevenson University, just exclusively doing that, you know, the whole two strength coaches and 31 team kind of deal. And then eventually, you know, my wife got pregnant. I'm from the Syracuse area. We're looking at daycare prices down in Baltimore, and we're like, oh man, this is a little bit much. Fortunately, out of pure coincidence, a job opened up at Syracuse. Applied for the job and got it. It was kind of a no-brainer. So, you know, as I'm talking to you right now, my mom's upstairs watching the baby, you know, which is not only obviously nice to save a little bit of money, but, you know, being able to drop your baby off with your mother every morning is pretty nice. It's pretty special, and they love each other. So it's been an awesome transition, you know, especially working with from 15 teams down to two has been pretty nice as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that the whole phrase "you can't pour from an empty cup" holds true at the end of the day. And I think the strength and conditioning profession is a great example of it, right? To your point, you know, I see a lot of strength coaches who have to work with 20, 25, 30 teams themselves. And it's very difficult to program for that many teams, let alone find the time to work with that many teams and that many different athletes, right? You're talking 700-800 athletes here in some cases.
We had quite a bit. I mean, I think it was 500, somewhere around there was the deal. So like, you know, your entire day was being on the – I was actually just joking about it with a couple of my lacrosse players. The only thing I miss was being able to eat literally whatever I wanted, because I get like 22,000 steps in a day. And I mean, you know, burning that many calories was kind of nice to not have to ever, you know, turn down a piece of cheesecake.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, while there's some great things that come from that, you know, never stop, go, go, go mentality – I certainly think that a lot of times we get a lot more benefit out of actually taking a break, taking a pause, and being able to disconnect a little bit. And I think that's something that, you know, I've seen in the PT world that we need to do more, but I also see it in the strength and conditioning world a little bit as well. Is I think that there's so many voices now, and it's great. There's a lot of great information out there, and I love it, but there's this obsession lately that I see where a lot of people want things to be what they call like functional, like, yeah, you know, well, doing like sports rehab with a PT, it needs to be functional, or it needs to be sports specific, or same thing with like strength and conditioning. They look at exercise and they say, well, this is not functional enough, or we could make it better for the sport. And I guess I'm just a little bit confused by some of these terms that they throw out, like functional, because at least to me, I just feel like exercise in general is pretty functional.
Yeah, man. It's always really funny, you know, when I feel like that one meme, it's like when people say functional, it's like, what do you mean by that? You know, like is getting faster and more explosive not functional? Is adding more contractile tissue not functional? Like, you know, it's a super confusing term from me. And I honestly think it's just kind of a sales tactic, you know, to say, oh, look at us, we're different. you know, this looks like your sport, when in terms of, you know, when in reality, a lot of that training is just like messing up good mechanics. You know, there's no need to combine your technique and what your sport coach is doing on the field and bring it into the weight room. And I think that it gets perpetuated by sport coaches wanting more of the skill practice. So they're look at the weight room as an opportunity to do that. And just parents, because it looks flashy and it looks cool. And if you're going to be spending $150 an hour on your kids, you want the flashiest new cool thing. When in reality, you know, it's just making your training easier. It's taking off a load. It's tampering down the intensity, and you're not actually probably exerting enough effort to add any more of that contractile tissue to get faster, to get stronger. You're just kind of wasting your time.
Yeah, and it's so great that you bring up all those. I think every time I open up Instagram, I see something new that just makes me shake my head. The other day, someone sent me a video, and it was a baseball catcher, and they're in the catcher position, like the deep squat there, and they put bands with like a little cuff around their wrists and around their ankles, and they had them stand up real quick and throw. And it just looked like the silliest thing to me, because now it's like we're actually slowing down that
That's what I
throw,
mean.
actually slow down that whole motion of standing up from the squat position. And it's like, normally I want people to pop up quick from that, but now with the added resistance, we're moving slower. And it's like, do we really need to take someone who's probably overthrowing to begin with and putting a lot of strain on their arm and add even more volume of the throwing motion and more, you know, strain on that, when in reality, they're probably doing too much in the first place?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, we talk about, I mean, people, it's, I think you see it all over the place now, all this overuse stuff from youth athletes that they sometimes even bring them with them to college. And it's like, okay, you know, they're already having X amount of practices and games and all. So we want to bring them into the weight room and give them that exact same stimulus. Like, when are they going to have the time to adapt and recover from all those efforts in games and practice? You know, like, if we're just going to keep doing that same exact stuff in the weight room, it doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I completely agree. And to that point as well, I mean, high school athletes, college athletes, there's so many other stressors and factors going on for them outside of the weight room that we often forget about, right? Like homework, sleep, home life, relationships, all the, you know, classes that they have to attend, that sort of thing. Like, there's a lot of other factors that go into the life of an athlete. You know, I think the NCAA has tried to make that whole student athlete thing, with emphasis on the student, a bigger priority lately, which I like. But we often forget about that in the terms of like training and strength and conditioning. And to me, it's like, if I have someone who's not just overtaxed in sport, but overtaxed in life, they're not sleeping enough, they're not recovering enough, we don't know how to manage stress amongst so many other things. And now I'm going to throw, you know, 10 to 15 ridiculous exercises that they've never done before at them, expect something good to happen. It's just asking for trouble, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's just more unnecessary stressors. You know, like, this profession, like, I found is so much about managing certain stressors. And I think that's been, once I've had that kind of realization, that's kind of really, really helped me grow in this profession.
Right. And it's so refreshing for me to hear from someone such as yourself, who works with extremely high level athletes at the D1 level, saying like, look, we don't need all this super specific sports stuff. Maybe instead, it sounds like we need to go back to some of the more basic things. And you know, I'm currently working through an EXO certification, and the big thing that they've promoted so far in that is minimum effective dose, right? Like, you know, just do enough to move the needle forward and not necessarily worry about, like, you know, overdoing, just get enough to move the needle forward.
Yeah, that's our in-season program in a nutshell. So we lift 3 days a week, but like, I use a microdose approach to that. You look at my workouts, you know, sometimes we're doing 3 to 4 exercises. That's it in a session. But I make sure to spread that out over the week. And again, right, you'll see me for sure, right? I bash the quote unquote functional people. And I bash all the people who are like, oh, back squats are bad and this and that. But you look at my in-season programming, we don't do a lot of back squats. And people are like, well, isn't that hypocritical? And it's like, well, there's a reason and there's some nuance behind that, right? So like, I do view a back squat as a stressor to a low back. I don't think a stressor is a bad thing. However, we don't have the time to recover from that stress that our low back's going to get from a back squat because we have practice the next day. And when you look at the studies of how much force is going through your body when you're sprinting, it's, I think I want to say it's like 8 times your body weight. So, you know, it doesn't make sense to hit a super, super heavy back squat on a Tuesday and less than 24 hours, we're back on the field putting that much force through our spine again. No, you're probably going to have kids get low back stiffness, low back pain, and that's going to negatively affect their play. And again, that's common sense. That's what I've seen so far in my coaching is we at times, there are times that we want to stress the back. We want those muscles to adapt. We want our spine to get stronger because it's going to help us be more resilient athletes. However, in season where sometimes we're playing 3 games in 7 days and even still practice is very, very demanding, we just don't have time to recover. And that's with the assumption our athletes are getting 8 hours of sleep and the adequate amount of macro and micronutrients and hydration, which newsflash, they're not. You know what I mean? Like, they're not. You know, in you can try the all of the surveys and educate as much as you want. Some of them will listen. Some of them won't. Some of them will do some of the things. Some of them will do none of the things. So, you know, you have to take that into account as well, because at the end of the day, the coaching staff isn't going to really care as to why, right? Why does Johnny hurt Johnny, Jimmy, Joe? Why is their back hurt? Well, they didn't sleep. They didn't eat this and that. No. Like, it happened in the weight room. It shouldn't happen in the weight room. We need them to play Saturday. So why am I going to go try to force something down just because I think it's good and it's going to negatively impact our team? Whereas I can do a heavy unilateral movement and it's just about as good. It really is. It's just about as good.
Yeah, no, I love those points. I mean, going back to that term functional, I think if you want your sessions or exercise or whatever to actually have meaning and purpose and have some kind of carryover, you have to understand what the main thing is. And when you're in season for a sport, especially one as demanding as lacrosse, right? We were talking about, you know, earlier today, just before we jumped on the recording, is like the amount of shots that go into the practice for the attackers, the intensity of the sport itself, like it's very unique. And it's like, if that's our main thing, then our time in the weight room should not detract from that main thing, or it should not take away from that. It should support and enhance it. But we can't like turn guys into gym junkies when their whole like reason for being there is lacrosse or sport, right? Like, if their goal is to play lacrosse and be, you know, an All-American, or, you know, team goes to the tournament and wins big or something like that, like, you know, then my goal can't be different from that. My goal has to be the same as the team, the same as the athlete. We all have to have a common goal and mission. And the goal is not, you know, well, we're going to one rep max your back squat 3 days before your first game because, you know, gains, bro. So I certainly think that having that kind of common goal and intention behind things is really essential, first off. And second off, I love your point too about like, look, like, we don't need anything much or anything fancy here. You mentioned the whole concept of microdosing things. So that's something that I'm becoming more and more, you know, interested in myself is, you know, it used to be how far can I push the needle to get the most, like the maximum effective dose before we start to see detrimental effects. And now it's like, what's the minimum I can do to see results and then not really overdo it or give people like balance for the rest of their life? Because like a lot of these athletes, as we've said, they're doing so much already. They don't want to spend 2 hours in the gym with you, I don't think. And it's like, if we can get, you know, 4 or 5 exercises, get them in and out 40, 45 minutes, and they leave feeling better than they came in, then feel like my job's done.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. Like, so what you need to grow and build muscle is it's tough, especially the more training experience that you have. Like, you have to grind, you have to work hard if you want to put muscle on. Now, right, will I get some student athletes, like we talked about earlier, who have never seen the weight room before and they just start looking at a barbell and grow? Absolutely. But most, I'd say 80% of the kids coming in have a pretty solid training background. So, however, on the flip side of it, the amount that you need to just maintain your muscle mass, your strength and power, is significantly lower than that. So that's where a lot of like the confusion comes in. So I might need, you know, 5 to 7 hard sets of a, you know, some sort of a movement that's going to involve knee extension if I want to build my quads in a session, plus some auxiliary work. But if I just want to maintain my lower body strength throughout a lacrosse season, 2 to 3 sets, 3 to 6 reps will absolutely maintain all of your strength and power. I mean, coming from me with, you know, I personally have about 20 years of training experience now. I started lifting seriously when I was 15. So I would call myself, you know, pretty high training age. And that's the same for me. Like, if I want to maintain my 1 rep max back squat, if I hit 2 sets at 75% for 5 reps, I have found every single time my squat doesn't move. So it's having the knowledge and having the confidence in yourself that you're not under prescribing. You know what it takes. It's in the literature. Other strength coaches talk about it. I think the only difficult part sometimes is selling it to some of my meatheads, you know. Yeah. Like some of the, and, you know, I understand where they're coming from, you know, like they've seen the work that it takes to have to build muscle and get stronger. So you have to assume, hey, if I want to keep this, I still have to really, really grind until I can barely walk after a workout. And, you know, it's that education of telling them, like, actually, you know, when you're sprinting on the field, that's a super powerful training stimulus as well. Like, don't neglect that fact. Sprinting is a really high training stimulus for the lower body. And having to explain the difference, like we said, between, you know, the maximum effective dose and the minimum effective dose, and why it's appropriate that we, in season at least, lean towards that minimum effective dose to keeping you fresh and healthy.
Yeah, I like that. How do you go about approaching those conversations? Because I've seen the same thing where, you know, there's some people who come in and they're like, look, like that wasn't enough. I want more. I want it to be harder. Or like, I want extra workouts to do on top of PT, on top of strength and conditioning. It's just become a tough conversation for me because on one hand, I get the mindset and the mentality and I respect it a lot. You know, I would much rather have the kid who wants to do more than the kid who doesn't want to do anything in the first place. But at the same time, it can become so difficult to pull the reins back on some of these guys and girls.
Yeah, you have to have conversations like this. Mm-hmm. You just have to be fully honest. You have to be fully transparent. And you know what? Sometimes they won't listen. Sometimes they're going to go to the rec center and do their own thing anyway. And that's usually when I'll talk to their position coach and we'll all have a meeting together, because at the end of the day, like, you know, what we don't want is a kid doing a max back squat on a Sunday and then Monday is limping out at practice. So I just want to make sure, like, the coaching staff, the student athlete, and myself are all on the same page of what's going on. So education, these talks, doing your best, but at the end of the day, not getting super, super upset when they just say, I'm going to go do what I want at the rec center anyway. Yeah. If you do that, like if you take it personally, you're not going to have a lot of really good relationships. You know what I mean? It's really hard to not take it personally, but at the end of the day, that's, you know, sometimes that's kind of what you have to do. And eventually, you know, coincidentally, a lot of these kids are younger, like freshmen and sophomores. By the time they're juniors and seniors and they've played 2 seasons of collegiate lacrosse, they're like, oh, wow, like this is really tough and probably not sustainable. I'm probably going to start backing off. of all the that extra work that I do. And honestly, some of the kids want, I will give them extra work that I know isn't going to have that much of a detrimental impact on them. You know, like I'll give them some extra mobility stuff. I always will give them some more like arms and shoulders and upper body, all that fun stuff that they love to do so much. I just find a way to like meet them in the middle a little bit. And as long as it's not heavy compound lower body exercises, I can live with that.
Yeah, I think I think it's really difficult to get some of these people to buy into extra arm form work, right, Tony?
Yeah, not
it's like okay, you're gonna do 10 sets of curls and 10 sets of pushdowns, and they're just like, really? Great. Everyone loves that, and I think this is another place too where I really like to add in the isometric exercises as well, because you know, not to get too sidetracked by this, amount of soft tissue tendinous type injuries we're seeing lately, from just your typical tendonitis, tendinopathy that can really sideline people to like full blown like tendon ruptures, right? Like I've seen more 20-year-olds with tendon ruptures now than I read about in the literature when I was going through my schooling. So maybe it's just a coincidence in the location I am, or maybe it's, you know, hey, something needs to change with our training approach. And for me, you know, doing some like low load, slow burn, isometric stuff tends to be a really good barrier to entry for that. People feel, you know, really beat up afterwards, but like it's more of the beat up from like the muscle was shaking and they've never felt that before, not the beat up like, wow, I just crushed like, you know, 5 rep max back squat or something like that. Like it's a different kind of stimulus. So I love that point that you brought up. And on top of that as well, you know, going back to that whole functional term, I think a lot of the things, even curls and arm form, can actually be functional. You know, I think when people think about like, you know, sports specific training or strength and conditioning or functional fitness or whatever term you want to throw at it, they immediately think all the athletic stuff like your plyos and your barbell work and dumbbell work and kettlebell work. And not to say that's not important, but like a lot of these other things, like, you know, really like arm work or like even like machines can actually be more useful to what we're trying to achieve than some of the traditional like functional tools or whatever.
Yeah, machines rule. I would do so much training on machines if we had money and space. I love them. You get a great stimulus, you get a great on the target muscle that you're looking for. I have, again, it's asked me when I was 24, 25, I would be yelling at you, you know, but the more and more I've trained and the more and more I've trained athletes, I love machines. And bring up to your point of bicep curls being functional. So like, have you seen the padding that lacrosse players wear now? It doesn't exist. These kids like don't have pads. It's wild. And they're getting just checked over. And like one of our kids after the game this year, his entire arm was just welts, black and blue, right? You can still hit people with your shoulder, and I'm gonna tell you this right now, those shoulder pads that they wear aren't doing very much at all. So like would you rather be getting hit in your flesh and bone, or would you rather have some muscle in your upper body to be able to sustain some of that week to week? I think it's a very obvious answer to the question. It's a rhetorical question there. Like, yeah, you want to have some muscle to be able to take that hit. I mean, think about getting hit. I mean, obviously, no matter what, it's going to hurt. But like, think about any time that you get hit in that spot where you don't have a lot of muscle and it goes right into your bone, that hurts significantly more. And again, like you can break your bone. A hard check in a spot, like if you don't have anything in your biceps, man, that could potentially break your freaking arm. Like some of those, I forgot what the number, the force number was. They just did one of those sports science on a PLL guy, but that on the wrong spot could absolutely break bone. Same thing in your shoulders. Like if you don't have any sort of deltoid muscle and you go to drop a hit on somebody, man, like you can absolutely break something in your upper body. So yeah, I would say adding, you know, the quote unquote armor to your upper body would be a lot more functional than like everybody's favorite exercise, the Turkish get up. What the hell is that? What is that doing for me? You know what I mean? Like we're not, I, and again, right, 10 years ago, I was like, oh man, this exercise so awesome and stability and fun. It didn't help me in any facet of athletic performance. I don't think it ever helped any of my athletes in athletic performance. I'm sorry that I used to program that exercise. Like, it's not doing anything. It would have been much more functional for us to hit another couple sets of triceps and biceps at the end instead of doing stuff like that.
You know, it's so refreshing for you to say that. It's funny because think about the goalies too. And it's like, you know, you've got 110, 120 mile an hour shot coming at you and you have nothing covering your legs at all. Like, yeah. You know, that pair of sweatpants you're wearing, cut it. So I certainly think that adding muscle is a really good thing. And it's like, you know, sometimes like off season workouts might look like we have some like almost bodybuilder type splits there. And it's not necessarily the most athletic in nature, but it's like, look, like some people just need to put on a little bit of strength and size. Yeah. I think a lot of people forget that muscles act as a shock absorber in addition to moving and producing power and that sort of thing. And I think about some of the crazy lacrosse injuries that I've seen. Like there was one girl literally had a UCL injury from lacrosse. And the way she explained it was holding her stick and her arm got jolted back real quick. And I was like, you know, I'd never thought about that happening before. Like we think about it in baseball, but it was essentially the same motion. Just her stick got jolted while she was holding it. And I just can't help but wonder, like, you know, did anyone ever think about programming like arm form for her, like literally, like, you know, forearm strength, you know, the medial aspect of the forearm that way? Maybe it would have helped, maybe not. You know, hindsight's always 20/20, but I've never seen a case where strength hurts someone. I've never seen a case where muscle hurts.
No, and here's where people get confused, right? Where Matt Rea often talks about, you know, the how strong is too strong. And I think he said, like, once you're past 1.7 times your body weight, I think what he said is, like, adding strength makes you slower or something along the lines of that. Maybe that's true to an extent, but, like, I personally haven't seen that. Now, what I will say is if you're just doing, you know, again, how do I know I've done this? We were just doing like heavy lifting with a football team over a winter break. I mean, the coach said, I just want my guys stronger and bigger. I said, okay, we can do that. And that's kind of like all that we pushed. And some of our guys, 10 yards actually got a little bit slower probably. And I don't think that's necessarily because of the heavy lifting. It's probably just because we weren't doing enough of the other stuff, of the plyometrics and the explosive work and the sprints. I mean, we, to be fair, it was, you know, 30 degrees outside. I didn't really want to take athletes at 5 o'clock in the morning to run 40s out on a turf field. But yeah, I think you can absolutely lift heavy and get stronger. You just got to make sure you're doing the other stuff too. If that's all you're doing, yeah, you might slow down a little bit, but if you're doing that in conjunction with either a plyometric, an Olympic lift, whatever you feel like doing, playing your sport, no, it's like being stronger is not going to hurt you. It's just going to, if anything, build your tissue resiliency and help you out.
What does that come out to as far as like off-season formula or off-season workout, right? Like, you know, say one of your lacrosse kids or one of my lacrosse kids is listening to this right now and they want to figure out, okay, how can I program for my off-season that way? What is that kind of combination of, you know, brute strength with arm farm and armor building, for lack of a better way to put it, with mobility, plyo? How does all that come together?
Yeah, I like to use the quadrant system in my programming. So yeah, high, medium, low stimulus, that kind of stuff. So I just match intensities, and kind of how I look at it, maybe other people do look at it differently. Like I view all upper body training as low to medium intensity for a training stimulus. Like I mean, you know, I've done a super intensive upper body workout that's taken me an hour and a half, and I could probably go, you know, grapple a couple hours later and be absolutely fine. But if I do sprints and back squats in the same session along with that auxiliary work, like I'm pretty cooked for the day. So I like to program, again, like trying to think off the top of my head, Monday would be a high stimulus acceleration focus, you know, where we would do weights on the heavier side, weighted sprints, heavier back squats, a heavier hip hinge movement. Tuesday would be a low stimulus day, so any upper body work, I don't care, reps and sets and all that kind of stuff. Like, it can be strength, hypertrophy, whatever you want to get it. It can be all of them. Maybe some lighter aerobic conditioning. Wednesday could be an off day, or it could be that could be a day where you focus on your mobility work. And then some lighter stuff on the field. Thursday would be another intensive lower body day. That would be more of the explosive. So it would be, you know, some, maybe some fly sprints, some plyometrics, back squats with, you know, anywhere from 40 to 60, 1RM, you know, aiming for speed, and some sort of explosive hinge movement on top of that. Friday is another upper body day, just different work than you did on Tuesday, plus some aerobic conditioning. And then that Saturday can be a really tough intensive conditioning day. So that just kind of like thinking off the top of my head, that's potentially how you could set up your programming from a structure standpoint.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it kind of checks all the boxes that you need. There's a lot of intention behind the training too, which I like. It's not just like throwing random things in. Oh, this day we're going to focus on this. This day we're going to focus on that. I think a lot of programs that I've seen almost look like just random like hodgepodges of everything you need to clap together. And it's like, you know, I don't know what the goal of this session is because there's 20 different things we're working on. There's a time and a place for that. I'll say in season when you're like limited in time, when you're trying to just microdose a little bit of everything, it sometimes looks like that, and that's okay. But it's like, if you've got the off season and, you know, you've got plenty of time to work with and you can really focus in on some of those qualities, like, you know, take advantage of that. You know, I know the term off season is kind of an oxymoron in today's day and age with sports, but
yeah, especially in lacrosse, especially in that.
Any kind of time like that, like, you have to take advantage of it because that's the time to move the needle forward, in my opinion. And also understanding too, how some of these different things work together, right? Like, you know, you mentioned like velocity based training on the squat and the importance of the plyometrics that way. Like, you know, I think personally all that tech that you can work in with the VBT or the force plates is great. I don't think that everyone needs it. I think
no,
it's a great
you absolutely don't need it.
But if you don't have it, like an essential element per se, but I will say I do love me some contrast training to be able to go from like, or even like a French method for that matter, to be able to go from high load to quick movements and kind of work along that force velocity curve. I find a lot of benefit and a lot of power behind that for the guys and the girls, you know, and I think that really matches the demand of a lot of these sports, right? Like, 1 minute you have to go quick and explode. The next minute, you know, you have to get ready to take a check or something like that and just absorb force. So I certainly see a lot of benefit from that kind of training method as well.
Yeah. I mean, like, for people that think slow speed strength doesn't matter, I feel like you don't watch very much lacrosse. I mean, it's almost like a lot of the, especially for like close defenders and attackmen, it's backing people down into the paint. Like, that happens 10 to 15 times in a game. And I'm like, oh yeah, that is absolutely slow speed strength. And it would absolutely be, this is where you'd say, oh yeah, it would absolutely be beneficial to be a guy with a bigger bench press. And guys are literally doing this. They're telling me bench press isn't functional, but you know how many times I see this in lacrosse? All the time. You know, same thing. Oh, what's it matter if they got a heavy back squat? Well, I see a lot of our attackers, like a low post player, backing down defenders like they're post players. You know what I'm saying? Like, drop step and doing all that other kind of stuff, and the defenders having to use like either isometric strength or slow speed strength so they don't get pushed into the goal. Now, all of it is important if we're trying to build a well-rounded lacrosse player.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so funny because this whole time we've been talking about the training and that sort of thing, and not once have I heard things like, you know, the blue foam or the weird semicircle balance disc things to stand on and hit stuff, or like any of these other like trendy things come up. And it's like, you know, I think so many people put so much stock into it, and it just really doesn't matter that much to me anyways. Like, I don't really think we need to stand on a piece of blue foam and call it balance, or like do our squats on a weird circular, you know, half inflated pad or anything like that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You're sacrificing intensity for novelty.
Yeah.
That's all you're getting with that. Like, you're not going to have any measurable positive outcomes doing that style of training. And again, I don't know. I'm not an expert. Maybe it's appropriate in the rehab setting. But for what we do in the weight room, in the limited time that I have, maybe if I had to kill 2 hours, we'd stand around on, you know, foam balls and touch our nose and stuff. But I don't have very much time with my athletes. So in the limited time that I have, I want to give them something that they are going to get like guaranteed positive results from.
Yeah. I've not been in the game that long. I'm still pretty young and new to a lot here, and I don't know everything. But you know, one of the things I've noticed is, and shout out to Danny Foley and his team at Rude Rock for all this, like the concept of fascia and proprioception and the body being able to tell where it is in space when we move and that sort of thing is essential. And I want that as part of our training, but I don't think the blue foam and a lot of these other fancy gimmicks really make sense for that.
Correct. You know,
well, we're removing proprioceptive input. We're taking the foot off of a stable surface where we get feedback, and we're putting it on something that's constantly moving. And it's like, you know, that doesn't really make sense for any sport I can think of. I think we always play on like a hard surface, whether it's, you know, turf or grass or ice. Like, you know, the surface underneath me is not moving as I move.
Exactly. And like, I, you know, talked with Jeff Moyer before, who does a lot of that proprioception stuff. And it's like adding that, like you said, the blue foam pad is, so what in our discussion with him, he said a lot of athletes have trouble getting that feedback through their foot. So they'll take a spike ball, remove the sock, and like literally jam the spike ball over their foot to aid in proprioception. Like, putting your foot on a blue pad is removing your foot's ability to use all its proprioceptors, and is kind of doing the opposite. So it doesn't make it. And again, right, yeah, it might be challenging to do, but it doesn't mean it's making you better at your sport. Like, it would be challenging to run into a wall with your head down too, but it's not making you a better athlete. People have to get that idea. Same thing with like sand workouts, right? It's sure, it's challenging to run in the sand, but it's not helping you develop at your sport in any sense.
Yeah, no. I will say it looks cool though, right?
Like, it looks, yeah, looks super cool.
And we're going on the iPhone, and you hit yourself a little Rocky sand sprint montage. Like,
oh, especially with the fast feet and speed ladder.
Oh my God.
If you get that going, yeah, it looks super, super high speed.
It's so funny because, like, I like the speed ladder for certain things. Like, if I have someone post-op ACL and I need to get a lot of volume of contact in to help increase confidence, I go right to the speed ladder, because I can get hundreds and hundreds of contacts in a very short amount of time. But we call it the speed ladder or the agility ladder, and I don't really see it developing any of those qualities. So I think there's, a time and a place for it, but I think our use of it has been a little misguided.
Yeah, so that's going to bring me – I kind of just had a thought of, like, people ask me all the time, is this good, is this bad? Well, it depends on what application you're talking about it for. People say all the time, oh, what do you think about the speed ladder? And then they just stop. And it's like, it's a tool, right? Are you using the tool properly? Are you, you know, if you have to, you know, hang a picture, are you going to use a chainsaw to hang the picture? Or are you going to use a hammer? It depends on what is this tool being used for. It's almost exclusively for everything. And again, We bashed the blue pads before, but is the blue pads useful if we're doing a heavy hip thrust and we don't want the barbell jamming on our hips? Absolutely. Then that's where the blue pad is useful for. See, people say, oh, what do you think of back squats? And that's the end of it. Well, in what context? Like, what am I preparing for? What else does the athlete have to do? There's just so much nuance that people don't want to apply. People want everything to be black and white, this good, this bad. And it's unfortunate. It's just not the case. And that's where you kind of start seeing the difference between the novices, the amateurs, and the professionals. Like, the professionals understand this concept. The debate that I'm so sick of having that I never will is exercise selection. Like, unless you're completely off, like, every time somebody starts talking about a front squat versus a back squat, I just hear the Charlie Brown adults. I just want, it doesn't matter. You know, both are going to be great. What context do we want to apply it in? So yeah, like the exact point you're bringing up, speed ladder's fine in a certain context. If you're looking to increase your 40 time and your agility, it's a terrible tool. Your athletes really like it and you want to use it for them to get their heart rate up, then it's a super sweet tool. So make sure you're just using the tools appropriately.
You hit so many great points there, Tony. I mean, first off, I don't think there really is a thing as bad exercise unless your exercise is like getting everyone freaking hurt. Like, if you're
exactly. Lacrosse,
we're in the middle of the season, it's the day before a game, and we're all going to one rep max our like Jefferson curl. Like, okay.
It's probably not smart.
Maybe that's not what we need. There's a lot of different applications for things. And I think it comes down to what you see benefit from. Like, part of that whole, like, practicing in a, what do they call it, like, evidence-based manner, part of it is literally your experience as a coach, as a clinician, whatever that way. You can be the PubMed ranger and rattle off research about, how the front squat gives you, like, 1.3754% more quad activation than the back squat. Great. Good for you. But like, if you don't see that result carry over in what you do, then what's the point? One. And two, you also touched on the point of like what the athletes enjoy. And I think that's a huge part of it too, right? Like, my athletes love back squat and they can all do it. Then I'm going to let them back squat. I'm not going to force them to switch to, Zercher squats, which is what I prefer to do myself. Just
right.
Because I like it. So I certainly think that playing into what people like, playing into people's strengths and, making it a more enjoyable experience for them instead of forcing all this stuff down them. It's not necessarily a my way or the highway. I will say on your point on exercise selection, I see a lot of people program the right things, but implement them the wrong way. I made a little post about this just a few days ago. Like, I love the weighted crunch. I think weighted sit up, I should say. I think armor building the, anterior aspect of the abdominal wall is essential for a lot of athletes, especially to your point before about, padding and taking shots and that sort of thing. There's a lot of important stuff behind your abdominal wall, and having a, general layer of muscle in front of it can be really helpful for us. However, I see a lot of people just train it through like a real short range of motion, real quick reps. And it's like, no, like, I want a full range. I want like a full contraction here. Like, just because you choose a good exercise doesn't mean you implement it correctly. So really
understand. Exactly.
I think the art is more of the programming considerations and how you apply it and less about the exercise selection.
Yeah, programming is just words and numbers on a paper. You can have the perfect program, but if it's not executed with the right intention, nothing's going to happen. Like, to your point, you see people wanting to do ab work for, 3 sets of 100. And it's like, would you do 3 sets of 100 to grow at with your bicep at a shortened length, right? Would you do 300 reps with a bicep curl at this range of motion to build your biceps? What's the difference between your biceps and your abdominals? They're still muscles. You still want to get that deep stretch. You want to get the load under the deep stretch. You want the full range of motion. And a lot of the times, and again, right, the hypertrophy range is 5 to 30, give or take, repetition. So, I mean, you have that much frame to work with. But, like, you know, just doing sets of 100 because you feel like your muscle burns, is it's not going to actually build any muscle in there.
You know, to that point as well, I can think of a number of different programs I've seen, you know, different fitness DVDs that used to be on the infomercials and that sort of thing. If you're like us and old enough to remember those things, you know, those, in my opinion, the programming was not how I would approach it. I didn't really care for it, but it got results for a ton of people. So it's like, you know, just because you have the perfect program doesn't mean it's going to get you results. And just because your programming is a little bit off doesn't mean it's not going to get results. As we mentioned before, I think a lot of times we're ridiculously hard on ourselves when in reality, like, sometimes we have to accept the fact that it's not going to be perfect, but it's going to get the job done and move the needle forward in the direction we want it to.
Yeah, I do that. I have that problem all the time. But perfect really is the enemy of good.
Yeah.
You know, like, at the end of the day, you need high intensity, high effort, consistency, a relatively intelligent program, and you're probably going to get some really positive results if you just have all those things. That's like the 90%. You know, the 10%, again, which is going to be more beneficial the higher training age, the more elite that the athlete is helpful. But if you spend all your time worrying about just that 10% of it, then you're going to leave the good stuff off of the table, and it's just going to look like a flat line. Like you said, you're not going to move the needle at all.
Tony, I feel like we could probably have this discussion all day long about, you know, function.
I probably could.
Good programming versus bad programming. And, you know, we didn't even touch on some of my favorite names and different philosophies that they've, you know, promoted that I don't necessarily agree with or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Have any kind of closing thoughts or closing remarks or anything we missed today?
Off the top of my head, not really. I think we had I enjoyed our discussion very much, though. It's my first podcast ever, so I definitely, again, appreciate you having me on. Again, I know we were gonna talk about the GPS, but maybe that's a good start for the next conversation.
For sure, definitely. Tony, for people who want to find out more about you and all that you're up to that way, where can they find you at?
Just on Instagram these days, coach_Pedrotti. So Pedrotti.
Awesome. We will link to that in the description below. That way, if you didn't quite catch it, you can just click there. Tony, really appreciate your time today, man. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man. Really appreciate it.